What's up, cheese bags? Welcome into the H&M Trucking Podcast. And this is a very special edition of Trucking Up History presented by H&M Trucking. And today, we're going to dig into what makes this whole trucking industry run. What am I talking about? Well, diesel, of course. So sit back, buckle up, relax, and keep the shiny side up with me when I ask, what is diesel? Here on Trucking Up History, presented by H&M Trucking.
From Omaha, Nebraska, to whatever lane you're driving, this is the H&M Trucking Podcast with your host, Marcus Bridges.
Drivers, being a holiday weekend, we got a bunch of stuff coming up, so I'll try to be quick. In New Orleans, the Jazz and Heritage Festival going on the 25th through the 5th. Thunder Beach Spring Rally is in Panama City, Florida from the 1st through the 5th. Bike Stock Oklahoma is in Depew, I guess I'm saying that right, from the 2nd through the 5th. The Steel Horse Rallies in Fort Smith, Arkansas, the 3rd and the 4th. Shaky Knees Music Festivals in Atlanta, the 3rd through the 5th. Beach Life Festival in Redondo Beach, California, the 3rd through the 5th. The Soul Bloom Music Festivals in Sacramento, the 3rd through the 5th. Lovers and Friends Festivals in Las Vegas on the 4th. And NASCAR is hitting the Advent Health 400 in Kansas City on the 5th. Wow. Watch out for those rolling roadblocks and be careful out there. I'm 1010 on the side.
Spearmint flavored gas, also known as diesel, powers our nation's transportation system. But why? Why not just use regular gas instead of the St. Paddy's Day colored stuff? How is diesel even made? How is it that different? On this episode of Bill Nye the Science Guy, well, sorry, scratch that. Let's roll coal and talk about diesel here on Trucking Up History. Santa's most famous reindeer, Rudolph Diesel, is responsible for the diesel engine. All the way back in 1885, Rudy Boy set up his shop in Paris to build what would be considered a compression ignition engine. More on that later. He slaved away for 13 years trying to figure out the engineering and science that would make an engine that was slower burning and more efficient. During this time, he received numerous patents that would solidify him as the father of diesel. At the end of the 13 years, Rudolph celebrated a groundbreaking moment. One of his improved diesel engines carried a heavy load at an efficiency of 26.2% compared to the popular steam engine that operated at 10% efficiency. At the time, steam was the dream. Every heavy load and heavy vehicle operated using steam. Rudolph changed the game, not just for Santa, but for people who actually transport things. In 1898, the first diesel engine for use was built. Although Rudolph's invention changed the transportation game, he felt threatened by other engineers and developers trying to join him to improve upon the diesel engine. He wasn't always on the same page as others, especially those who wanted to promote this newly found technology to the market. Unfortunately, this deeply troubled him and his anal ways. In 1913, he mysteriously vanished from a ship on a voyage to England, most likely committing suicide. At the time, many of his patents expired, allowing other companies to develop the diesel engine further. You might be thinking, diesel engines popped up at the same time trucks did. Coincidence? Actually, no. Although that timing would have been exceptional, many of the first trucks were powered by regular old gas. It wasn't until 1923 that the first diesel truck was unveiled by Daimler-Benz, as in Mercedes-Benz. That was just for a regular old truck, though. So what about semi-trucks? The first diesel engine for semi-trucks was released in 1933 by Kenworth. Yet, it wasn't until the 1950s that diesel semis started catching on. The great conversation couldn't have come at a better time, because the interstate system came about in the late 1950s, thanks to Big Dick Eisenhower. Although technology has changed and made diesel engines even more efficient since then, the same principles of the engine apply. So what are these principles? Well, let's dig into how diesel engines work. Both gas and diesel engines are four-stroke internal combustion engines, but we already knew that, right? Those four-stroke engines convert the chemical energy in fuel to mechanical energy that moves pistons. Pistons connected to a crankshaft and the up-and-down motion of the piston, a linear motion, creates the rotary motion needed to turn the wheels of the vehicle. The big difference between regular gas, or petrol if you're nasty, and diesel engines is this. A gasoline engine has a spark plug, not a butt plug. A spark plug that ignites the gas-air mixture, causing combustion. The diesel engine isn't into that plug stuff. This is because the hot air diesel mixture combusts when highly compressed. The engine takes in air, compresses it, and injects the fuel directly into the combustion chamber. This is also known as direct injection. But I'm really telling you a lot that you already know here. The heat of the compressed air in a diesel engine lights the fuel, instead of how gasoline engines use a port injection or a carburetor. If that's still confusing, think of it like this. Gas engines take gas and air, squeeze it tightly together, and light that mixture with the spark plug like we talked about earlier. Diesel engines take air, squeeze that down, then diesel fuel is injected into the air. The heat of that compressed or squeezed air in a diesel engine ignites the fuel automatically, while a gasoline engine needs that plug for ignition. Remember, gas engines need spark plugs because they're freaky. Diesel engines do not. The efficiency of the diesel engine comes into play due to this compression or squeezing that we're talking about. Gasoline engines can only compress at a ratio of 8 to 1 or 12 to 1, while diesel engines can compress at a ratio of 14 to 1 or as high as 25 to 1. Why such a higher compression rate? Remember, gas engines have to compress both fuel and air together, while diesel only have to compress air, because then diesel fuel is misted into already compressed air. Higher compression means higher efficiency. Remember how I mentioned pistons earlier? Let's go through the diesel engine's process one more time to get it through everyone's heads, this time from the standpoint of the piston in a diesel engine. Step 1, the piston moves down, drawing air into the cylinder. Step 2, the piston moves up, compressing the newly drawn air in the cylinder. Before the piston reaches the top of the cylinder, diesel fuel is injected as a mist into the cylinder. The piston then moves down the cylinder, but the exhaust valves aren't open at this time. The piston moves back up the cylinder, forcing the combusted diesel out of the cylinder in the form of exhaust. The process then repeats itself. Got it? It's all about injecting, plugs, and squeezing, also known as the next 50 Shades of Grey book. Now that we know how diesel engines work, one should ask, what even is diesel? Diesel is a product of refined crude oil at petroleum refineries. American-based refineries produce an average of 11 to 12 gallons of diesel from each 42-gallon barrel of crude oil, while gas accounts for 19 to 20 gallons of this. The rest of the barrel is broken down into asphalt, jet fuel, lubricants, and other bottom-of-the-barrel products such as lipstick. But this still doesn't answer the question, what the heck is diesel? Diesel is an energy-rich fuel that, compared to gasoline, contains more carbon atoms. These carbon atoms are also in longer chains. These longer chains of hydrocarbons mean that they can store more power, more boom, if you will. Big boom means diesel is also heavier than gasoline. Since it's heavier, it means diesel gives off fewer fumes, making it less volatile. So let's hypothetically do a science experiment with gas and diesel. Everyone loves to set things on fire, so imagine this. You have two open containers, one full of diesel and the other full of gasoline. Light two matches and drop one into each of the containers. What happens? Well, many of us know the gasoline container will burst into flames. However, will the diesel container do the same? No, it won't. No flames, no fire. Sorry to disappoint all of our arsonists out there. The hydrocarbons diesel contains don't allow it to just burn in the open air. Diesel is less volatile, remember. For diesel to burn, we'd need a lot of compression. It seems like diesel is the more mature and level-headed of the brothers when it comes to comparing it to gasoline. But how are they so different from each other when they come from the same place? It's like steak and ground beef. Both come from the same animal, but are processed differently. The process of creating diesel from crude oil is one that isn't necessarily easy. So don't try this at home, kids. But there are a few steps here to make diesel if you don't want to pay for it at the next Flying J that you see. First of all, crude oil is heated up to roughly 750 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm pretty sure that's hot enough to flash fry a chicken in 3 seconds. Also, don't try that at home. At this heat, the liquid oil turns into a vapor. The vapor then enters a fractional distillation tower. You've probably seen some of these towers driving before. They're large, skinny metal tubes that are found at refineries. South Chicago, Southeast Texas, good old New Jersey, and many other places have refineries capable of producing diesel in these towers. So once the vapor enters these towers, the vapor begins to rise. As it rises, it cools down. As the vapor cools down because of the rising, it turns back into liquid around 400 degrees Fahrenheit. As it is turning back into liquid, it is captured by different distillation plates in the tower. That which is collected is then siphoned into diesel tanks, and there you have diesel fuel. It doesn't seem like too strenuous of a process. However, to get a liquid like crude oil above 750 degrees Fahrenheit, you've got to have a lot of heat. Think about it like this. Chicken is safe to eat at 165 degrees Fahrenheit. To get it there, you have to cook it for some time. It heats 300 plus degrees Fahrenheit. So imagine how hot you have to cook oil if you want it to get to 750 degrees. A Samsung oven ain't gonna cut it. And neither will your Traeger or your air fryer. Now, we already know that cooking gas and diesel isn't necessarily the best thing for the environment, but there is a difference between the way that gas and diesel impact the environment once in use. That is, if you are driving a vehicle operating on gas, you will be emitting more carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide than a vehicle with diesel. This is surprising to many people because diesel vehicles, like semi-trucks, tend to be larger, and the majority of people think larger vehicle, larger emission of carbon dioxide and monoxide. If you didn't know, carbon dioxide is the largest greenhouse gas contributor in the world. It accounts for roughly 76% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So gas-powered vehicles are worse for the environment, right? Well, it's a double-edged sword. The reason diesel vehicles emit less carbon dioxide and monoxide is because of the type of hydrocarbon it contains. We won't get into the chemistry for this for the sake of sanity, my own and yours, so you'll have to trust me on this. But while diesel releases less carbon dioxide and monoxide, there's an opposite reaction as there is in many things. Diesel vehicles instead release higher levels of nitrogen dioxide and soot. Larger amounts of nitrogen dioxide is a fun little thing that has been linked to respiratory problems in humans all the way up to lung cancer. Unfortunately, it releases double of what gas vehicles do. Nitrogen dioxide also has a global warming potential 300 times that of carbon dioxide. So, saying it isn't the best for greenhouse gas emissions is probably an understatement. However, it's not the largest problem, surprisingly. That's because soot is released at 10 to 20 times higher rates in diesel vehicles. Soot is a main contributor to smog, health conditions such as asthma, cancer, and heart disease, as well as acid rain. But who doesn't love to be rained on by a little bit of acid while listening to Led Zeppelin at Woodstock? We need to do another hypothetical experiment, though. With fire this time, to demonstrate how much soot diesel fuel produces compared to gas. So put your arsonist hat on again and let's do this. Imagine this. You have an open flame from a Bunsen burner, gas in a spray bottle, and diesel in a spray bottle. Spray the gas over the Bunsen burner first. You'll see it's super quick to dissipate. Now spray the diesel over the Bunsen burner. It dissipates much slower and leaves a larger black cloud. That is soot. Let's take it one step further. Get 2 2-liter pop bottles and cut the bottoms off so they fit over the burner. Spray one with gas, it just lights on fire. Yay. Now blow it out unless you want to watch it burn. Now do the same thing with the other pop bottle, but spray it with diesel. It lights on fire, but then look into the bottle. What do you think you'd see? The answer is a four-letter word that rhymes with foot. Take a paper towel and clean the inside of the pop bottle. That paper towel will have a lot of black particles on it, just as we thought. That's soot. While diesel engines produce more soot and therefore are harder to clean, some people really love their soot. This is because of the behavior that is rolling coal. You might see some of the cool kids out there doing this, but it doesn't mean that you have to. Rolling coal is basically when you make your diesel engine fart a giant black soot cloud of its exhaust. Although the Clean Air Act prohibits this type of behavior, any driver can roll coal by getting under the hood and increasing the amount of fuel entering the engine. Back in the day, rolling coal was popular in tractor pulls, but in the mid-2000s, rolling coal became a form of freedom and protesting. Today, many people just think that those that roll coal need to get their engine fixed. However, most people who do this do it intentionally. So the next time you see a trucker or a four-wheeler rolling coal, just think to yourself, wow, that person is so much cooler than me. Because obviously they are, since they're letting you know by rolling coal. To combat these hardcore drivers is a hippie-loving goodie known as biodiesel. Biodiesel is a fun invention that makes diesel engines a little less terrible for the environment. Biodiesel consists of vegetable oil or animal fat in combination with the classic diesel fuel. Biodiesel can be easily made by just about anything. Corn, soybeans, cow fat, or even human fat could technically be used in the creation of biodiesel. What's crazy is that biodiesel can be used in pretty much all standard diesel engines with the use of filters. It's almost always blended, but could technically be used in its pure form. However, the standard blend is 20% bio and 80% diesel, and in the US, the most common oil used is soybean oil. Many government incentives have been handed out to refineries to produce bioproducts because it's better for the environment, performs better, is renewable, and if spilled, would not cause nearly as much damage to the environment. Seems like a win to me. Our father of diesel, Mr. Rudolph himself, actually used peanut oil with his diesel in his first engine. This isn't a new concept, it's just one some people are hesitant about because they're not really informed about how it works. Actually, if you aren't using biodiesel, there is still some bio in your fuel, roughly 1% at least. This is because it makes for a great lubricant, meaning there's less wear and tear on your engine. So whether or not, your diesel vehicle is probably lubed up with some soybean oil. And who are we kidding? Soybean oil is the best lube for other extracurricular activities too. I'm certain of it. The science behind biodiesel is once again complicated, but what you need to know is that animal fats, plant oils, and cooking oils have stuff in them called triglycerols. Through a fancy process called transesterification, triglycerols are transformed into esters and glycerol. Have I lost you yet? Don't worry, I'm lost as well. The esters that remain are what we then call biodiesel. You can find biodiesel all over the country, but Iowa produces the most, surprisingly. We know Iowa loves their corn, maybe not as much as the corn huskers in the state to the west of them, but they really love their biodiesel. They produce over 3 million more barrels of biodiesel than the next top dog, which is Texas. There are multiple reasons for this, but the main ones being farmers are compensated for using it on their farms, gas stations that use it are given a state tax credit, and biodiesel increases the net income of farmers because there is more of a need for their products. Technically, you could take the grease used by Wingstop and throw it in your fuel tank as long as you had the correct filters to weed out all the crummy stuff. But we still don't recommend that you do that. Instead, fill up with biodiesel whenever you get the chance. The Midwest is full of biodiesel gas stations such as Casey's. Go get their breakfast pizza while you're at it. That's to die for. While there are so many pros to biodiesel, the main reason it hasn't been widely accepted is because the storage conditions needed to store it properly are a bit more tedious, especially in the winter. If it gets too cold, it can gel up, meaning too much in your fuel tank could gel up too. That's why there are different blends of biodiesel. Just like you can put more cream in your coffee, you can put more or less bio in your diesel. For example, if you go to a Casey's in the winter, you'll find a 5% blend of biodiesel. But if you go in the summer, you'll find a 20% blend. Another con, as we talked about before, is that you have to change filters out more with biodiesel because more lube can actually lead to more deposits in your fuel tanks. Overall, though, fill up with biodiesel when you can. Stop rolling coal unless you want somebody to know how well endowed you are. And be thankful for Big Daddy Cool, Rudolph Diesel. That's going to wrap up this episode of Trucking Up History presented by H&M Trucking. I've been your host, Marcus. Thanks for stopping by and learning a little bit with me. Keep the shiny side up, and as always, stay fresh, cheesebags. We'll see you next time.
Sun's out, guns out, watch that speed. Boy, you don't want to hear that noise, do you? Here's a fact for you. For more than two decades, speeding has been involved in approximately one-third of all motor vehicle fatalities. Let that sink in for a second. I know you're in a hurry. You want to get parked. You want to get to where you're going. But speed also affects your safety, even when you're driving the speed limit, but maybe too fast for road conditions. You know, snow, ice, rain, bad weather, roads under repair, or maybe it's just not very well lit. You can't see. Speeding endangers not only the life of the speeder, but all the people on the road around them, including law enforcement officers. And they get a little testy about these things. What drives speeding? Traffic, congestion, for that's one of the most frequently mentioned contributing factors. And it leads to aggressive driving, like including speeding, changing lanes frequently, or becoming angry because somebody got in their way. How about running late? That's always a good one. Anonymity. Might not have thought of that, but you kind of get isolated in your car. You think you can do things that, you know, I mean, grandma, sweet little grandma that would never hurt a fly. Boy, she can be hell on the road, can't she? And some people just, they don't care. Disregard for others and the law. So here's how to deal with speeding and aggressive drivers. Again, you know this stuff, but doesn't hurt to review. If you're in the left lane, somebody wants to pass, if you can, move over, let them by. Give those speeding drivers, those aggressive drivers, plenty of space. You never know. They might cause an accident, never even be in it. If the speeder's tailgating you, trying to engage you in risky driving, use your judgment to safely steer your vehicle out of the way. And if you can't, if this guy's really road raging you, call the police. 911, it's easy enough. Y'all be careful out there. We all want you to get home safe.
Thank you for listening to the H&M Trucking Podcast. Please leave a review, subscribe, and connect with Marcus over at the H&M Trucking social media channels. And if you're considering a job at H&M, find us at hmtrucking.com. Until next time, stay safe and ahead of the curve drivers.